Vaidarbhyasattu Sandesham. Nishamya Yadunandana. Ragriya Paninapani. Rahasan Idam Abravit. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Vaidharbhya Satu Sandesham. Nishamya Yadunandanaha. Ragriya Paninapani. Rahasan Idam Abravit. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Vaidarbhya Satu Sandesham. Nishamya Yadunandanaha. Ragriya Paninapani. Rahasan Idam Abravit. Shukadev Goswami said, Vaidarbhya, of the princess of the Vidarbha, Saha, he, tu, and Sandesham, the confidential message, Nishamya, hearing, Yadunandanaha, Lord Krishna, the descendant of Yadu, Pragriya, taking, Panina, by his hand, Panim, the hand of the Brahman messenger, Rahasan, smiling, Idam, this, Abravit, said. Shukadev Goswami said, thus hearing the confidential message of Princess Vaidarbhi, Lord Yadunandana took the Brahman's hand and smiling spoke to him as follows. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Tataham Apitach Chito, Nidram Chana Labhe Nishi, Vedaham Rukmina Dveshan, mamodvaho nivaritaha. The Supreme Lord said, just as Rukmini, his mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. I cannot even sleep at night. I know that Rukmi, out of envy, has forbidden our marriage. Tam anayasya unmatya rajanya pasadan mride matparam anavadyangim edhasongni sikham iva. She has dedicated herself exclusively to me, and her beauty is flawless. I will bring her here after thrashing those worthless kings in battle. Just as one brings a blazing flame out of firewood. Purport. When latent fire is aroused in wood, the fire bursts forth, consuming the wood in the act of manifestation. Similarly, Lord Krishna boldly predicted that Rukmini would come forth to take his hand, and that in the process, the wicked kings would be burned by the fire of Krishna's determination. Om Agyanti Midandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Bancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. She has dedicated herself exclusively to me, and her beauty is flawless. I will bring her here after thrashing those worthless kings in battle. Just as one brings a blazing fire out of firewood. Srila Shukadeva Goswami is herein describing Bhagavan Sri Krishna's response to the confidential message that the Brahman had given to Krishna on behalf of the Princess Rukmini. In the message, Rukmini, in sheer desperation and helplessness, was crying out for Krishna to save her from the hands of materialistic, exploitative people and to take her to be his own. Shishupal, Jarasandha, Salya, so many demoniac kings whose power was very great. They were all assembled together, specifically to make sure that Krishna did not come to interfere with the marriage between Rukmini and Shishupal. Because it was well known that Rukmini had given her heart to Krishna and only Krishna. She was longing and crying for Krishna to be her husband. And her father, Maharaj Bhishmaka, he also agreed that there was no one so suitable to be the beautiful Rukmini's husband than Lord Krishna. But Rukmi, the eldest brother, he was violently and viciously envious of Krishna. And therefore he decided that Rukmini should be Shishupal's bride, who just happened to be Krishna's foremost enemy. Seeing this terrible plight, her life about to be stolen away by illusion, Rukmini sent a message to Krishna through a Brahman. Notice that Rukmini sent this message through a Brahman. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namah. Because the Brahmins are very dear to Krishna. Why? When we speak about Brahmins, in this case, we are speaking about Brahmins who are devotees of the Lord, who are pure, who are peaceful, who are willing to make all sacrifices to render service to humanity by helping them to become Krishna conscious. And this is the duty of a Brahman, to accept inconveniences, even poverty and risks, to help elevate people's consciousness toward bhakti or devotion to Krishna. So Rukmini understood that if we approach Krishna through such a devotee, through such a kind and gentle Brahman, then he will be certain to very seriously hear our message. In the same way, a devotee always wants to offer everything to Krishna through the spiritual master or through the great Vaishnavas. So this Brahman, he took the message to Krishna and he heard Rukmini's words. She was begging, she was pleading, as unqualified as she was, that Krishna kindly come and rescue her from this terrible condition of material life. And Krishna does not simply hear the words that we speak, but from within the heart, he hears how it is spoken. After all, anyone can recite slokas, and anyone can even chant God's holy name. But how we chant, how we address the Lord, is what actually Krishna responds to. Srila Prabhupada explained that when we address Krishna, we should be like a child crying for its mother. A child is helpless. When a child is in danger, the child knows no one but the mother. And the child realizes that there's nothing that it can do to protect itself. It's too small. It's too incapable. So in that mood of helplessness, the child utterly depending that my mother is my only hope. In this way, we should learn to chant the holy names. And Rukmini, she was in that condition. Such a gentle young girl, surrounded by these jackals, these terrible Maharati warriors, all wanting to devour her good qualities and exploit her. So this message was so full of devotion, was so full of love. And Krishna explains, yeyathamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamyaham, that according to how we approach him, he will reward us accordingly. So here Krishna is confirming this. First, he took the Brahman's hand, encouraging him. And then smiling, he spoke as follows. Just as Rukmini's mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. He said, I cannot even sleep at night because I know that out of envy, Rukmini has forbidden our marriage. Krishna is a personality. And from this beautiful response to Krishna's prayer, to Rukmini's prayers, we can understand really what bhakti means. Rukmini knew that Krishna would respond according to her devotion. And similarly, a devotee understands that Krishna is a person. Krishna is not a force. Krishna is not an energy. Krishna is a person. And he responds as a person. But he is a supreme, perfect person. Krishna is explaining here that he cannot even sleep at night thinking of the plight that Rukmini is in. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Srila Sanatana Goswami, he explains a devotee, Gopa Kumar, how after going through so many conditions in this material world, he finally returned to Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And Krishna, he explains to Gopa Kumar, his devotee, that all the time that you were away, I was hearing your cries. I was always longing for the time when I would see you. I was with you through all your tribulations, through all your trials, through all your difficulties on the spiritual path. The love that Krishna has for his devotee is inconceivable. We are all jivatmas. That means our love for Krishna is infinitesimal, although it is eternal. But Krishna's love for every one of his parts and parcels is infinite. It is supreme. It is without boundaries. When when a devotee longs to see Krishna, Krishna longs to see that devotee. How is it that the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, cannot sleep at night thinking of Rukmini? This is the greatness and the beauty of Krishna. This is the nature of his love. And this is why devotees want to give everything for him. Although he is Atmaram, he is self-sufficient, he does not need us. We are insignificant. But yet, due to love, he wants us so much. He's willing to come to this world and perform so many wonderful activities just to attract our hearts back to him. This is the love of Krishna. Today is the disappearance day of Sripad Madhvacharya. This afternoon we will discuss the life of Sri Madhvacharya. But one of the principles that he established so strongly in this world was that God is a person. In the ultimate issue, he is the personality of Godhead. And that the jiva soul is eternally the servant of the Lord. In this way, Madhvacharya established the principles of real bhakti. You'll find that many of the people who teach bhakti are not really bhaktas at all. So many of the biggest reciters of Srimad Bhagavat or Ramayana, they talk about practically nothing but bhakti. But they have no real conception of bhakti. They will discuss how bhakti is the most simple and direct process of self-realization. Now they'll use the same examples that we do. And they'll even tell the same stories that we do. But their conception is that ultimately, bhakti is a means of fixing our mind on what is transcendental. And through that transcendental medium of the Lord's pastimes and the Lord's names, you can transcend all duality, and you can transcend even that form of God that you are worshiping, and you can transcend the temporary condition of rendering devotional service to the Lord, and you can enter into the sphere of what they consider the highest truth, impersonal realization. That ultimately God is impersonal. He is a supreme formless energy in whom we all ultimately merge. And that for our deliverance, the Lord will temporarily accept a form within this world. And because we have form, and because we have personality, and because in our conditioned state we can only believe in things we can see and we can hear and we can talk about, therefore the Lord appears in this way just to give us the chance to purify our existence. And such persons, when they are narrating Ramayana or Bhagavatam, sometimes in thinking of Ram or thinking of Krishna, even tears flow from their eyes. Because they actually are attracted to the personality. But still, their aim Their conception is that just see how wonderful the Supreme Brahman is, this formless Lord, that he appears in such a wonderful, attractive form that brings tears to our eyes. It's like we also, when we go to the cinema house and we see some tragedy, we cry. Or we see some something very funny and we laugh. Or we see something very frightening and we become scared. And then the person who's the hero, who we've been so attached to, when the hero is in some terrible plight, again we begin to cry. But actually, behind it we know that all it is lights that are just flashing against the screen, making an appearance of these people. But actually, the people, really, they don't exist. It's just lights. It's just a screen. And we know that it's really just an illusion, the whole movie. But still, we identify with it so much. Our minds become so captivated by it. So similar to this. When such philosophers narrate the Lord's pastimes, they understand that ultimately the Lord is just light. But this light is taking so many forms, and they're so entertaining, and they're so enjoyable to our senses to watch. But ultimately, when the movie's over, there's just a blank screen. So similarly, we recite Ramayana, we recite Bhagavat, and we weep and we cry and we dance and we chant and we sing, and we're completely absorbed in all these narrations. They're just temporary manifestations of light. But ultimately, when everything's said and done, there's just the blank screen. When the show's over, there's only Aham Brahmasmi, that I am God, I am the Supreme. And therefore, devotees must be very careful, because by hearing such narrations from persons who appear to have great bhakti, we become influenced by that consciousness. And it actually disturbs a devotee's real service attitude. In fact, the acharyas would claim that there's no real service attitude at all. Therefore, Madhvacharya wanted to establish in such clear, undefeatable terms that ultimately Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That ultimately Lord Narayan is the cause of all causes. And when we hear of his pastimes, and when we chant his names, we should be conscious that the absolute truth reciprocates and responds to our prayers in the spiritual world and within our hearts. And Madhvacharya's philosophy is so important to understand. And this is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu particularly accepted initiation in his sampradaya. Today, everything is so mixed up. Personalism, impersonalism. You can be listening to a person for hours and days and weeks and months and years, and you don't even really know whether he believes in real bhakti or not. Everything is so unclear. And if you ask someone, they don't even know. Do you believe that God is a person or not a person? Ultimately, is he formless or form? To get a clear answer is very difficult. Yes, ultimately he's formless. Most of them will tell you this. Ultimately he's formless. But at the same time, we love his form. We love his form so much. We love his personality so much. We love his pastime so much. But what is that love? There is still envy within that love. Because ultimately you're thinking that it's your pastimes. You're thinking that it's your form. Anyways, the Hindu religion today is so mixed up and so confused and without any real clear conception. Madhvacharya's teachings, he came to make everything so strikingly clear that it wreaked fear in the hearts of everyone, unless they were willing to accept it and surrender to it. He taught Dvaita philosophy, the philosophy of dualism, where he established that you never were God and you'll never be God. You are Jiva. And you are always subordinate to Narayan. And you must surrender and serve Narayan. And he explained the diversified energies of the Absolute Truth. He didn't say this material world was an illusion. He said it is real, but it is temporary. In the fact, he didn't accept this doctrine of illusion. He accepted the reality of everything. And he categorized everything according to its proper tattva. And he would explain how we can be released. The illusion is when we identify with something that we are not. Shankaracharya used to use the example of the snake and the rope. That if you think a snake, if you think a rope is a snake, that is an illusion. But Madhvacharya said, but the fact that you think that this rope is a snake means somewhere there is a snake. That means the snake is a reality, and the rope is also a reality, and you are also a reality. The illusion is misidentification. Anyways, it's a very, very deep and wonderful philosophy, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took the essence of that and the essence of all the great philosophies, and he created, not created, but he revealed Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the simultaneous one and difference philosophy. Because if we have an understanding of this one and different dualistic conception, that we are persons and God is ultimately a person, then we can truly understand in its light how we can have a loving reciprocation with God eternally. And then with real bhakti, true bhakti, we could call out his holy name. With true bhakti, we can pray to the Lord to protect us and to deliver us from the clutches of Maya. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, Krishna is absolute. As Bhagavan, he is a person, and his Brahma Jyoti effulgence as all pervading Brahmani, he is there. So suppose some soul out of ignorance gets attracted to impersonal Brahman and really loves it. So since Krishna is absolute, and since Krishna is the bestower of knowledge, does Krishna ultimately give that soul knowledge of the person Krishna, or the soul remains ignorant at that only?
If you approach the Lord as impersonal, you can only be he will reveal himself as impersonal. You cannot love the impersonal Brahman. A person can only love a person. You see, because of this great misrepresentation of the Absolute Truth, you'll find that all the Vaishnav preachers, they really do not put emphasis on the impersonal, because they know it's very dangerous. They put all emphasis on the personal. Impersonalists put emphasis on the oneness of us and God. And the Vaishnavas always put the emphasis on the difference. Why? For two reasons. Because it is through the difference that devotion is born. And also because there is so much pseudo-philosophy and impersonalism that is literally misleading people of all religions, all over the world, that we don't want to give credence to those misconceptions which are already plaguing people so badly. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, what is his pranam mantra? Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pricharani Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatyade Satara. That this great disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is relevant in itself, because what was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, one of his very famous qualities? He was known as Singha Guru. Singha Guru didn't mean that he would just yell at people. For his devotees, he was not Singha Guru. For his devotees, he was the most loving father, friend, and guide. But for the impersonalists, he was Singha Guru. For the impersonalists, he would roar at them. Not only for their sake, but for the sake of everyone. If a Mayavadi was walking down the street and they saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati walking, they would run and hide, because they knew that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would attack them like a lion and devour their misconceptions in front of everyone. And no one could defeat him. No one could defend themselves against him, because he was right. So they either had to surrender or they had to run and hide. And Srila Prabhupada, in one Vyas Puja offering, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he wrote a poem. And in that poem, it was a beautiful poem, there was one verse. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved impersonal, calamity thou hast removed. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati read that, the whole rest of the poem and all the other Vyas Puja offerings were glorifying his mercy and his knowledge and his various attributes and qualities. But Bhaktisiddhanta said, this verse shows that Abhay Charanaravinda has captured the true essence of my mission. And he would read this verse wherever he would go, and to show people how this Abhay Charanaravinda has really captured the essence of his mission. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, is impersonal, calamity thou hast removed. This was very much his mission. Because you cannot establish real bhakti unless you completely annihilate and obliterate the Mayavad conception, the residue of which has a very subtle contamination in almost everyone's heart. We cannot give credibility to that. We do not find the Vaishnava Charyas doing that. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, being the humble servant of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he came to this world, to the Western world, to remove that voidism and impersonalism. Nirvishesha shunyavari paschatya deshatarani. He has come to the Western world, and he's traveling throughout the world to remove, to liberate us from the contaminations of voidism and impersonalism. Why? This is his mercy. Because without surgically taking this misconception from our hearts, we can never understand what is love. What is eternal love? What is real bhakti? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that we are one and different than the Lord. But he explained it thoroughly in terms of personalism and bhakti. Those who would explain from the impersonal point of view, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for Sarvabhauma, he completely defeated him. Prakashananda Saraswati and the Mayavadis, he would have nothing to do with them. Ultimately, he defeated them and converted them. In this way, what does oneness and different mean in the terms of Mahaprabhu's philosophy? We are one in quality, but the emphasis is not that. The emphasis is that we are eternally the servant. We are part and parcel. We are different in quantity. Krishna is the Lord and we are the servant. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is meant to bring us back to Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And all of these contaminations must be removed. Otherwise, so many people are speaking about bhakti, but they're Mayavadis. Or they're just basically confused. They don't really know what they are. And we'll fall prey to that contamination unless great souls like Madhva and the disciplic representatives of here establish it very clearly. No. We are eternally servants of Krishna. Does that answer your question?
In India it is seen now that most of the people have this conception of impersonal Brahma. What is the way of deliverance to these people now? Many of them. How they can be delivered?
To preach Krishna consciousness. You see, simply to give them the holy name of Krishna. Is very important, but we must also give them the understanding of how to properly chant the holy name of Krishna. In other words, Srila Prabhupada gave the name, but he also wrote so many books to teach us how to chant the name. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Bhakti Vinod, Narottam Das, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they all taught that the Yuga Dharma is Harinam. But they also wrote so many books to establish the personality of Godhead and the real principles of true bhakti. Almost every impersonalist chants the name of God. And no doubt there is benefit, but through their chanting they will never attain pure bhakti unless they approach the name with a desire for pure bhakti. Perhaps not everyone can read all these wonderful books, but if you read it and you explain it in a simple way and convince people, that's all that's required. That is the mission. That is the mission that we have accepted in our life. Not just to become purified ourselves, but to help everyone understand, everyone, possibly, what are the real principles of love, devotion, Krishna consciousness.
In relation with the Madhvacharya Sampradaya.
In the Madhva, the best way to glorify Madhvacharya is to defeat Mayavad philosophy. That was his specialty. When we go to Udupi, if you talk to the Madhva Acharyas, that's the first thing they like to do, is defeat Mayavad philosophy. They're trained. When they're sent to Gurukul, that's the first thing they're trained to do, is defeat the Mayavadis. Defeat the impersonalists. It's not ego, it's compassion. If someone has a disease, you don't say, well, you're all right. You're all right, I'm all right. No, you say, you are diseased and I'm going to cut it out. It's love. Not love saying, oh, very nice, you have your disease and I have, you have your disease on your leg and I have my leg, so it's all one. Oh, you are diseased and I'm going to cut it and it's going to hurt, but I'm going to cut it. It's love. It's not fanaticism. It's not sectarianism. It's love. Madhva was powerful in this way. He would defeat one way or other. Yes?
When we follow the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, there are basically two points where there is a little difference between the philosophy. So in what relation we should see it? The first thing I would like to know about the Madhvacharyas, as far as I know, they don't accept the Goloka conception. They only have the Vaikuntha platform. So, and the other thing is, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally went on the tour of South India, he has a discussion with Madhvacharya and he says how Krishna's form is superior to Narayan. And third is Prabhunanda Saraswati, in one of his books, he mentions that one who don't accept Chaitanya and only a Krishna, then
If you're going to quote, you have to quote right. Otherwise, don't try to quote.
Yeah, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami.
What?
Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes, yes.
So in what? Because we accept many people, especially in Karnataka, when they see that we are followers of Madhvacharya.
You see, Madhvacharya taught the principles of pure bhakti. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he extracted the essence of all the four sampradayas. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. In fact, in the Navadvip Mahatmya, it describes how Lord Chaitanya gave his darshan to Madhvacharya and was praising him for his great quality of defeating the Advaita conceptions and establishing the pure principles of devotional service or bhakti. But these great acharyas were giving a progressive understanding of the Absolute Truth. They all actually had a mission. And although in Navadvipa Mahatmya, Madhvacharya actually surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya told him that you must keep this a secret and continue teaching people to surrender to Lord Narayan. Because Madhva was teaching what had to be taught at the time, in the sense that Buddha had just completely nullified any respect for the Vedic literatures. But he had his purpose. He was a Vishnu avatar to reestablish non-violence and proper human behavior and meditation and self-control. And then Ramanuja or Shankaracharya reestablished the Vedas, but in order to do it in a society that was completely voidistic, he established the Vedas with an impersonal conception. Mayavad is basically covered voidism. You're talking about a void, but calling it God. Huh? And discussing it in terms of an energy rather than a nothing. Ramanujacharya, he extracted from the Vedas the real essence, which is devotion to Lord Narayan. And Madhvacharya really crashed down and made distinction with no clear, unclear terms of the difference between impersonalism and personalism. But he was teaching love of the Supreme Lord and service to the Supreme Lord in awe and reverence. Awe and reverence means Narayan. It was through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhavendra Puri and others that the evolution of the revelation of the essence of the scriptures was brought about. Yes, Madhva established Narayan as the supreme because he was teaching. Basically his mission was to defeat the impersonalistic conception and teach devotion to the Lord in a mood of servitude, with reverence, that God is great. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed beyond God's greatness is his sweetness. And in this way he revealed the supreme position of Krishna. So in this sense there is no contradiction, there is no conflict between Madhvacharya's teaching and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. It is just a higher and fuller revelation that was given by Lord Chaitanya. It is said that in Madhvacharya Sampradaya, that sweetness of Madhurya Ras did not appear until Madhavendra Puri. But that was the master plan that was arranged by the Lord from the very beginning. So in essence, they are the same philosophy, but in detail there are differences, and there's a purpose for those differences.
Maharaj ji, you said that we can ask for pure devotion, but if somebody's destiny is written as the Lord wants it, what is the use of asking for pure devotion? If somebody, you said we can ask for pure devotion, bhakti, but if somebody's destiny is written that this is how it is going to be, even if he asks, what is the use?
Krishna is the supreme controller, and he can intervene with our destiny. Destiny means our karmic condition. Krishna says, Sarvadharman Purijaja, when you surrender to him, he removes you from your karmic condition of life. That is your free will. If you turn to Krishna, he can change your destiny. If you do not turn to Krishna, then all you have no, you are helplessly going to be moved about by your destiny, by your karmic conditions. Haribol.